Let's see if anybody asks about it. I'll just tell them it is what you want it to be.
I'm not to be passive aggressive or anything, but it's what you want it to be.
Yeah, okay? Whatever you'd like it to be, you just put it out there.
You know what? You just have to decide for yourself what it is. Well, I don't know. What do you think it is?
Yeah. I'll be the one asking questions here.
Well, the C is for coffee. The W is for water. And the F is not for food.
It's for French fries. Hello, Avalanche fans, and welcome back to the Avs Hockey Podcast. This is your home for almost everything Avalanche, and I'm your host, Jay Veen. In this show, my co-host, James Tapeleg Graylin, and I talk about the Avalanche's playoff chances, their pile of injuries, Iggy's one-timer, and the line of 40, 90, and 92 hockeying like bosses. Those topics and much more Avalanche and hockey stuff coming at you in episode number 94 of the Avs Hockey Podcast. Stay tuned. The AHP is next. Hey, what's going on, Avs fans? Welcome back to the Avs Hockey Podcast. He is James Tapeleg Graylin, and I'm Jay Veen, and this is your home for almost everything Avalanche. What's going on, James?
Hi there. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm lovely. I'm in the beautiful city of Cincinnati, right on the water. I'll tell you what I'm excited for. Tonight, for the Cincinnati Cyclones, it is bring your dog to the game night.
Yeah.
It is pucks and pups, which you can't say three times fast or else no. You'll be censored.
Yes.
And there are wiener dog race on the ice. They will have wiener dog races on the ice. I am excited.
You had me at wiener dog race.
Yeah, but it's yes. on the ice.
Oh, man. That's going to be glorious.
This is going to be what I am so excited for this.
Wow.
Even more exciting. Jay Veen, tell me what number of episode this is.
James Tapeleg Graylin, this is episode number 94 of the Avs Hockey Podcast. Your home for almost everything Avalanche. And this is, of course, the Ryan Smith edition of the show.
The sad, mopey Ryan Smith edition.
Ryan Smith, he cried. He cried. That's what Ryan Smith does, and that's okay. That's all right. He eventually made his way out, you know, as everybody knows, back to Edmonton, which is kind of where he shouldn't have left in the first place. We barely got to know him here. He only played a couple seasons here. 132 games. He had 40 goals in those 132 games and 56 assists. 96 points in 132 games is not a bad thing at all. I don't know how many of those goals were scored on wraparounds, but that's what he liked to do. When I think of Ryan Smith, I think of crying, and that's okay. Like I'm saying, it's okay. And wraparounds. That's what I think of with Ryan Smith.
Ryan Smith was almost like the, It was like I'm trying to think of a good example of a movie where they basically did the exact same movie the second time, only not as well. And
it's happened that
Ryan Smith is the poor sequel that is just simply a remake to the Wayne Gretzky leaving in Edmonton.
Yeah.
Wayne Gretzky gets basically hosed over by management, shipped off to LA for players and cold hard cash.
Yes.
And nobody wanted to see him go. And then Ryan Smith years later is basically the same thing, but you know, obviously to a lesser degree because it's Ryan Smith and not
Wayne. There's Wayne Gretzky and not Wayne Gretzky. Those are your two categories right there.
And Ryan Smith, I mean, the thing with Ryan Smith was Ryan Smith really made me see how the free agent market can be just such a pot of gold promises that turn out to be lead.
Because he was signed with
he and Scott Hannon were the Scott big Hannon. Splash.
That's a lot of hair. That's a lot of mullet in one signing.
Oh, well, two so signings. Much flow.
One.
I mean, if you were. if you were paying per pound of hair, you were paying a lot, you know, there was a lot of hair there, but
that's a lot of salad for one press conference.
Mm-hmm. I remember I was on a plane to Atlanta, and when I got on free agent signing day, and when I got off the plane, Ryan Smith and Scott Hannon were signed. I was like, I think I'm excited. I'm not sure.
I know there's a lot of hair.
Yeah. But when the Avs do things or don't do things on free agent signing day, and you know, there's always the fans, you know, they wring their hands, they gnash their teeth. The Avs did too much. They didn't do enough. They didn't do the right thing. I just point to Scott Hannon and Ryan Smith and go, look, in that free agent period, those two guys were in the top five of the free agent draft or free agent market. And look what happened. Nothing.
Well, you got the Solani and Kuria signing too. So you never absolutely know.
And there was,
you never Solani quite know what's going to happen.
Kind of reminds me of this year in a way. I guess we could talk about that in a little bit, but you know, maybe we can just hit it right now. Because part of my problem with this season has been trying to wrap my head around this team and, you know, feeling like the Avalanche, you've always been my team. Like, this team of Avalanche players is my team. And part of the reason for that is still, you know, was the Jerome Iginla signing. It was so weird for years to cheer against Jerome Iginla and, you know, they're the Flames, they're over there and we don't like them. And now he's here and he's one of the Avs, and I love the Avs, but it's Jerome Iginla. It's so weird.
There you go.
And it's taken some time for me to like, to really feel it out and get on board. And that's, you know, that's my problem, not Jerome Iginla's, obviously, not the team's, obviously, but it was so much of that all at once. Like, if it had just been Jerome Iginla, probably wouldn't have been so, you know, would have been easier. But, you know, the loss of Stastny, who was a longtime player, you know, and a fixture with the Avs, and then, you know, getting Danny Briere, and that wasn't quite, you know, that didn't work out like people were hoping it would, and you know, other players that came in that, you know, we hardly even saw, like Jesse Winchester, and, you know, what happened to some of the Avs that have been injured. And boy, this sure doesn't look like the Avs team that we had last year.
No, not even close.
So in a way, the Kuria Solani thing kind of reminds me of that, just because there was so much upheaval all at once. There was, you know, there was Tony Granato with the coaching. There was the Patrick Waugh leaving and David Abisher stepping in. There was the Kuria Solani signings. It felt like a lot all at once. And this does too.
It does. But I think they're starting to figure things out as far as, I think that I've said it all along, the gap left by Stastny, since you mentioned him, I think they've finally moving forward. They've figured out, okay, here's what we can do without him. And you can see it pay off. But going back to Iginla too, that one-timer on the power play used to just crush the Avalanche. And at times you're like, okay, you know it's coming. Why can't you stop it? And now we're rooting for it. I think, you know, you can see between he and Tyson Barry on the power play. I tweeted it the other night, bombs away. At some point, somebody said something or they realized something. It's like, either the coaching staff or the players, because I'm sure if Iginla goes and talks with Waugh or whatever, I'm sure they can have a conversation about it. It's like, you know what? Feed me the one-timer either on the point or a little inside the point, and let's see what happens. And that's really, I think, opened up some things, because as a defense, you have to respect that, because he will bury it, and he still does bury it even when you know it's coming. Ooh, and I said bury too. But yeah, Tyson Barry is the same way now. And it's really taken, although the power play is still 29th in the league, they don't look like it anymore. And that, I think that makes a big difference. So,
well, it's a gigantic hole to climb out of as far as the stats are concerned.
Well, there's stats and then the standings as well. I mean, it's just good to see that they are in last place in the Central Division. We'll talk about that in a second. And they are 29th in the league on the power play, but I think they're around 7th in the league in the penalty kill. You know, I think it took them a long time, but I think they're trying to figure out exactly who they are and what they can do. And I think this will lead to some momentum. Obviously it's led to some momentum this year, but I think with basically the same team coming back, it looks like for next season, it's a better place to be than, you know, the team and the fans and everybody was about 3 months ago.
Yeah. One of the things that you, when you said that about Jerome McGinley and his one-timer is that made me think of that was Ovechkin. Yep. Ovechkin in the top of that left circle is just deadly, even though you know it's coming. Even though, absolutely. I mean, that is his wheelhouse, but you don't want to take him out of that wheelhouse because it works. So, you know, why it's one of those why mess with success. And I think they finally, you know, they've gotten a little comfortable with finally with where that is and some of the, you know, with keeping Ginla there and some of the shakeups of the lineup, you know, finally starting to make some power play units rather than just, you know, well, we'll just put the first line out there. We'll put the second line out there and keep lines together.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think some of that is there, but yeah, you're the Ovechkin wheelhouse and the Ginla wheelhouse are pretty similar areas. You know, it just, yep, takes Ginla's down a little bit in the points in how many goals he scores, obviously, but
just on the top of that circle on the far, but you also need people that can move the puck, that can get the guys the puck, mm-hmm, in their wheelhouse. And that's Tyson Barrie. I mean, he's made some pretty unbelievable passes from the basic ones that he can get to the wheelhouse to, you know, he did one between the legs the other night and it wasn't trying to be fancy. That was his only option. He still got it where he needed to be. So, mm-hmm, you know, you got guys like Ginla and Ovechkin that can finish that shot, you know, almost on cue, but you also need people that'll get them the puck. And that's where the chemistry, and that's where, hey, I mean, we talked about it a little before the show, but Nathan MacKinnon being out, Eric Johnson being out. I know when they announced that Johnson was going to be out for as long as he was going to be at the All-Star break, you know, that was going to be a thing. They kept going there. And then when MacKinnon was, you know, said he had a broken foot, you know, the team announced he had a broken foot, everybody thought this team was done, and they have not skipped a beat. In fact, they might be even a little bit better without MacKinnon, which isn't, mm-hmm, anything we expected, but there's a lot of dynamics when it comes to that MacKinnon situation. And you had a great point on that before we came on air. What about Nathan MacKinnon and kind of his relationship with Patrick Waugh got your attention?
Well, you know, one of the things with Patrick Waugh has been, you know, after the very first game that he was coach, obviously he had this little, he had that freak out and shoving the glass at the Anaheim Ducks, which was, you know, just fun.
That was awesome.
And everybody expected him just to be a freak out machine. And he's just calm. And the players are always talking about how relaxed he is, how calm he is, the whole deal. And, that he's not going to be mean, but I think that one of the things that he may have lacked before was the ability to really hold players accountable. And with Nathan MacKinnon, there was that game where he basically benched MacKinnon. It was a couple games before the broken foot. And it was actually really nice to see, because you've got a lot of players with a lot of talent out there, and you don't want to say, oh, this guy is doing well, this guy isn't doing well, you know, we have to, you want to be able to say, look, if you're not doing well, you got to sit. But it's hard to bench that kind of money, you know, it's hard to bench that kind of talent when you need to. And to finally see Waugh really holding players accountable in that way was great. I think that it was one of the turning points for what helped them start to actually play a little better.
Yeah.
You know, you can't play favorites just because, you know, if Matt Duchene fell off and, you know, was playing horribly, maybe send him to the press box for a night, you know, send a message, yeah, say, this is the accountability. Nobody wants to see it. Nobody, you know,
no,
people wouldn't be happy with it, but if you've earned it, then that makes a huge difference.
There was, you know, a lot of,
we've all been,
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, it's just that we've all been in, I mean, hockey, obviously, it's a different world, and it's a different money structure, it's a lot more money, but we've all been in a situation where we've seen somebody who doesn't deserve to, you know, who doesn't deserve to be treated with favoritism, you know, favored and get ahead, and that never does well for, you know, for us, let's say, you know, if you see a coworker who slacks off all the time, but then the boss plays favorites, how does it make you want to perform? And hockey is obviously, you know, it may be a little different, but it's not necessarily so different. And, you know, it's still the way that people feel. And so if you have, if there's accountability being dished out, that helps the team be feel better about, yeah, okay, we do need to take this seriously, and I am being taken seriously, and my play, the reason I'm here is because of what I'm doing, not just because of what, you know, what the situation is. It's, I think it helps.
There was a lot of speculation with McKinnon as far as was it his foot why he was benched, or was it something that he was or wasn't doing? And whatever the speculation, that was what it was. But it seems like, and it was interesting because the press asked Patrick Waugh about it and say, hey, you know, Nathan McKinnon barely played in the third period. What happened there? And he gave your stock answer, where I think he just said, you know, we had some chemistry going, and I think what he said was something to the lines of, I forgot about him, or he got lost in the mix. And I think that was the respectful hockey answer, when I think there was a little more to it. So, you're totally right. I think with the salary that McKinnon's making, with his future, it's a little bit easier to hold him accountable than to healthy scratch a Matt Duchene, who's making a ton of money and, you know, obviously one of your good young core players. I think he's just, you know, Patrick Waugh's taking advantage of that, dealing with it well. And McKinnon came back after that game and I believe scored the first goal of the game, or he played really well the next game. So,
yeah,
you know, that worked out nicely, where McKinnon had every reason to pout and whine and sulk and, you know, do what your players who aren't going to last long in the league are going to do. And he comes out and, you know, wants to prove he's accountable. And it was really good to see that, because then the speculation really died down as far as, you know, is it a chemistry thing? Is it he not getting along well with Waugh, or is he actually injured? So that was good.
Yeah,
you know,
there's,
go ahead.
There's nothing wrong with, like, with a kid that's in his situation struggling and it not, you know, not responding well. There's, it happens, you know, he was rookie of the year and then things fall off, and it's easy to say, well, you know, things aren't going so well and I'm going to get down, and then you spiral. And there's nothing wrong with having a wake up call. You know,
if
he were a healthy scratch, that'd be a similar thing, but it'd be another level of it.
Yeah.
I don't see anything wrong with taking a guy who maybe even just needs it every once in a while. And especially, like, he's what, 19? You know,
yeah, he's 19.
Yeah, he can, if he gets sent a message every so often to say, hey, you know what, we need you to be better, then, yeah. and he probably needs that too.
Yeah. So. You never know the dynamics, and, you know, these guys have a heck of a lot of talent, but sometimes I've seen it with Duchene through the years, and I'm not trying to throw Duchene under a bus or anything, but I think Duchene wants to play a particular game and he wants his job to be the scorer. He's a shoot first guy. I mean, you got the Tangays of the world who are pass first guys, and Juan Tangay will tell you that. Duchene wants to score the hockey puck. That's what he wants to do. He doesn't look so comfortable when he's not doing it. He's not a distributor. He's not, you know, and I think he's figuring that out. And I've seen that through the years. He's been frustrated by that a little bit. And, you know, I don't know how much good or how much this hurts him, but Duchene's had an interesting year because it is not what he's wanted it to be, but it seems like he's getting a little more comfortable with it. You could see it totally bugged him before. He's not quite as frustrated with it. And I think he's okay, which is probably the first time in his career, watching other people take over. And maybe this is the Jarome Iginla effect, where he's okay watching Iginla score over and over and over. He's okay with, you know, he's playing with John Mitchell, and we can talk about Mitchell here in a second. But yeah, Duchene's kind of struck me as that kind of a player, and he's growing up and he's maturing. And a lot of these guys, they don't deal with struggle like this until they get to the biggest stage in their sport. And that's gotta be tough to deal with. Not easy to do. McKinnon's never struggled like this. Landeskog never struggled like this. Duchene's, you know, they've never played a day of minor league hockey in their life. They go from the juniors to the NHL, and it's going to take some time. And
absolutely,
it's time that's not kind of acceptable as fans, and because you have to win, you know, in order to make the fans happy and management happy and for everybody to be happy, you have to win. But why I said it all along, this is a process, and I think last year sped up that process just a little bit, but you can tell that Waugh, either that or he plays along very, very well. You know, this is our plan. And I don't think Waugh wants to win right now, but I don't think within his plan, you know, it's going to make or break it. You know, he's trying to develop this young talent. It's good to see that coming together last about 2 months of the season for sure.
Yeah. So, but, you know, so you go from last season where you had a lot of success, you know, where, you know, maybe there was some overachievement, or maybe it was just a matter of from where they were to where they wound up was quite a large step. You know, they got a few players that, that helped with that. The coaching change obviously helped with that. And then they step into, you know, into this season, and all of a sudden they have a massive amount of injuries. Yes. You know, they lose McKinnon late in the season. They lose Eric Johnson in this season, but they actually had the second most, they've had the second most man games lost in the entire league. And, yes. You know, I've heard over and over, you know, we're hockey fans. We hear it all the time. Nobody wants to use that as an excuse. Hey, you know what? I'm actually ready to use that as an excuse. I think it's a fine excuse at this point when you have 422 man games lost and before the Vancouver game. So now with eight players injured, it should be 430 before this Buffalo Sabres game.
Yep.
You know, there is a certain math to this.
Well, you look at the teams that have very little injuries. Montreal, I believe, is at the top of that list. I think they have less than 100 man games lost to injury. That makes a difference. It definitely does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look at Chicago. Nobody wants to say that Patrick Kane being injured should make that big of a difference. So the players can step up, blah, blah, blah. When you lose a talent like Patrick Kane, it's going to hurt. You know, it just
I see what you did there. You said hurt.
Oh, I did. I did a thing.
You did it there, and you didn't even mean to do it there.
I didn't even mean to do it.
You know, the thing is now the numbers are starting to come out too. Is it's the quality of the player who is injured as well. So they're starting to kind of say, okay, you know, this as compared to how a player played before and how their team played before they got hurt. They're starting to do that math now. And when it comes to as well as Calvin Pickard has played, when it comes to Varley being hurt. They're saying the drop between Varley and either Pickard or Berra, who has come up and replaced them, that is the largest drop in the National Hockey League. So there's that as well. I mean, people view that as a number, but you've got guys like, you got Borna Rendulic, who was here and then was gone with his broken leg, but you've got Jamie McGinn, you've got Patrick Bortolo, and you've got Jesse Winchester. That's a whole line of forwards. They obviously wouldn't have played together, but that's three forwards that would be in the lineup every night that are not in the lineup every night. And they're replaced by a Jordan Kiran or a Freddie Hamilton or a Joey Hischen or a Marc-Andre Cliche. I mean, you can't use it as an excuse, but this is reality, and they've dealt with it okay. But when you've got a whole line of guys that would otherwise not be in the lineup, it is tough to make up that, I guess, gap on a consistent basis night in, night out.
Well, you know, you were saying about the drop between Varley and any of the backup goaltenders. Yep. You know, there are parts that I think make just as much of a difference for other players that aren't necessarily points based, like Patrick Bortolo. If Patrick Bortolo were in the lineup, he would be taking on some of the tough guy role that Cody McLeod takes on. Now, McLeod's not going to cry about it. He's not complaining. He doesn't mind. He mixes it up. He gets in fights. But Cody McLeod has gotten in 18 fights this year. If Bortolo was in, you would hopefully cut that in half.
Oh, absolutely.
And that, because the fights take their toll, and they on your hands, on your season, on your head, on all of it. And maybe you're sticking a slightly more effective player in the box when you could have, you know, stuck a slightly less effective player in the box.
Yep.
Go ahead, please.
No, then you add on Nathan McKinnon, and you add on Eric Johnson, and you've got two fairly all-star quality guys who aren't in the lineup. You have to replace them as well. But your point about John Mitchell, I loved. So McKinnon being out leads to more ice time for John Mitchell, and then what happens?
Oh yeah, and he flourishes. I mean, he moves up. He does well. And you're wondering, wait a minute, why was he on the third line in the first place?
Yep.
And what do we make of the third line now? Where do those holes get plugged? And you know, I mean, McKinnon got moved down basically to the fourth line at one point.
Yep.
But why did it take this long for Mitchell to move up? Well, because everybody wants to see, it's exactly what we were saying before. What everybody wants to see McKinnon, who's a very good player, stay up on those lines. So
can you imagine Patrick Waugh having to answer those questions after the game? It's like, why is John Mitchell playing there and Nathan McKinnon playing down there? Well, it's better for our team. Oh man.
Yeah, exactly.
And then Twitter shuts down. That's what it is.
Yeah. It's almost the classic, you know, give a guy somebody to play with. And we heard that excuse for years with Calgary, that Jerome Iginla wouldn't have a guy to play with. Well, all of a sudden, Mitchell's in the exact same position. You know, here's a guy who's been struggling, and then you put him with guys who are better, and he gets better. Yeah, you know, it's that dynamic. There's a certain, I was thinking about this the other day with regards to the Minnesota Wild, and everybody was calling for Mike Yeo's head, and then all of a sudden they get a goaltender, and the goaltending goes up, and Mike Yeo's a genius. And it just makes you kind of wonder, wait a minute, what are we really not seeing? Yeah. What is nobody see? And even a lot of insiders, a lot of hockey experts were like, Mike Yeo's done. He's, you know, he's lost the room. It's all falling apart. And really what he just needed was a goaltender.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with us. You know, we look at the game and we go, okay, so John Mitchell's struggling. What the hell? What the hell? What the hell? And then he gets moved up to a line and plays with again, Iginla and Duchesne, and his points go up. Yeah. So is it a matter of the way that Mitchell is playing? Is it a matter of playing with better players, or is it also a matter of him adjusting his game to who he's on the ice with?
Yeah, and I think sometimes when guys are out for extended times, like the five guys I just mentioned, guys know they're going to be in the lineup for a little bit, and I think that affects mm-hmm. the chemistry, obviously. And when lines are changing every three or four games, that's one thing. But heck, I mean, all these injuries and everything, and I think it's been tried before, but you eventually get the line where the guys are clicking and the opponent, you know, who they're matching up against is working out pretty well, but I mean, you watch the Alex Tange, Ryan O'Reilly, Gabriel Landeskog line lately, and it doesn't matter who they're playing. They're going to take over. They've made the power play better. So you've got those three up front on the power play, and you've got Jerome Iginla and Tyson Barrie on the blue line. You just leave them out for as long as you can. And man, mm-hmm. watching these guys click. So everything kind of worked out, but you've got with so many injuries, but long-term injuries, maybe you hate to think of injuries as a good thing, but when they're out for that long, you can allow for some extra chemistry rather than, okay, we're going to ride this for a couple of games until McKinnon or whoever comes back. And then we'll try what we had before, because that's what worked long ago. It's, and you know, those are kind of the juggling acts that coaches and staffs have to deal with. And it cannot be an easy thing for sure.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. If, you know, when you look at the list of who's out and who's in, you know, if Wilson weren't injured,
there's another one.
So Ryan much Wilson, of the time, yeah. We would never hear of Redmond. We would have never heard his name. You know, if McGinn would have been in, and Jesse Winchester, who I always have to remind myself is actually on the team.
No kidding.
If those two were in, where would Klisch be? Where would Everberg be? Who would you never would have heard of Hamilton.
There you go.
And that's not to bash these guys. It's just, you know, that's just the way it is. It's there's only so much room on the lineup, and room would be taken up.
I forgot about Ryan Wilson too. I mean, they've got four guys that have been out for the season, and you've got two other guys that have, you know, that are going to miss 2+ months. They're hoping that Eric Johnson will be back soon. Jesse Winchester was rumored to have started a couple games ago. He was getting real close, and now they're saying he's not as close as he was. So I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't play this season, although it was really cool to see his struggles with the concussions. At one point in the middle of the season, they shut him down and said, don't even skate. You got to root for a guy like that, but man, you got to wonder, like, he and Hishin, guys that have really struggled with concussions, you got to think one or two more concussions, hopefully not happening. But if they do, I mean, that's big time implications. And then, you know, it's not necessarily a deeper hole that a team has to deal with, but a little more dynamic that, you know, you otherwise wouldn't have. And that's, I don't know, you kind of like to keep things simple. That's for sure. Yeah, but I mean,
you know, I'm going to throw you under the bus just a little bit here because we haven't talked about it before. It's a big bus. But how do you feel about Hischen? I mean, he's only been out a few games, you know, out with the Avs a few games.
Yeah.
How do you feel about his play?
He hasn't shown me much, but he, you know, based on his numbers, he's not, you know, you're not going to see much. You know, I don't know that fourth line. The fourth line has a good shift or two every game, and I think that's their job. But you got everybody healthy, you end up with like a Cody McLeod on the fourth line. You can end up, I guess, rolling four lines. And I'm not saying this is Joey Hischen's fault. I'm just saying this is the reality that the team is in. But you watch Patrick Roy put things together, and it ends up sometimes, and Peter McNabb will say it when it does happen, oh, he's just rolling three lines now. So, I don't know. People are real high on Hischen, and I think there's that hope that everybody wants him to be good. I just don't know where his role is on this team, especially now that they traded for Jordan Karen, and they traded Jordan, that guy, the new guy, and Freddie Hamilton. It makes you kind of wonder, but they did trade away a few other guys along with Max Talbot, but they kept Hischen. So I don't know. I mean, that was my on the fence thing there, but he hasn't shown me much to get really excited, but you know, you got to root for the guy. He had a great rush last game, against the Canucks, and almost scored one handed. So you'd like to see more of that. I just don't know what his role is with the team moving forward as people get healthier.
Yeah, I've been impressed with his speed and his mobility.
Definitely.
I would like to, in the context of what we were talking about a moment ago with Mitchell, I would like to see him play a game with Ginla and Duchesne, just to see what happens. You know, there's 0.1% of the Avs making the playoffs. And, you know, at this point it's like, well, what do you, you know, what kind of answers do we want for next season? Is almost the question.
No, the thing is, he's definitely, I think he's where a lot of the top offensive guys, get stuck in a minor league, in a NHL system, really. You know, you've got your top six guys in the minors who come up and have to fill third and fourth line roles, and that's not what they do. But you know, teams try and get as many first and second line guys for the most part. You know, you have to fill those other lines too. But when you have a choice, you're going to try and get those first and second line guys. And that's why I wonder with he and you know, really many other guys, what's going to be their role if nobody gets hurt. And there's just not room for them. And they haven't shown you, I guess, quite as much to be able to either trade somebody or not sign somebody and say, you know what, we're going to go with Joey Hischen on the top two lines instead of the long list of guys that could play there, including a John Mitchell or even like a Jamie McGinn. So I don't know. I worry about that. And I'm sure he worries about it a little bit more as well.
Yeah. I think it speaks volumes that they haven't traded him, but also, you know, what's the market for Joey Hischen like right now?
Exactly. They might have tried to trade him at the deadline. You never know. It looked like the Avalanche at the trade deadline. Hey, when you trade somebody, you've basically given up on them and said, you know, we're going to go with somebody else who we feel is either a person in your system, or you trade for the guy that's going to replace the guy you traded. But who knows how those dynamics go during a trade deadline. I think it'd be really interesting if we knew more about that, which we never will, but I'm always curious about that. Like which trades don't happen that nobody ever will find out about. And maybe one of those was Joey Hischen.
Yeah. Yeah. It's possible. It's funny because we've talked a lot about just about everybody on the Avs, but we really haven't talked about Tanguay, O'Reilly, and Landeskog. Those three and that line. We haven't, they've been spectacular lately.
Engage beast mode. I mean, they've been fabulous, and I don't know who the catalyst is there. They're all three catalysts, and just hearing I tweeted last game, I said, I can see Alex Tanguay in a coaching or an organizational role. I would love for that to be for the Avalanche when he's done playing, but to hear him talk about the chemistry between the line, and he's really articulate when it comes to it, and very hockey, and I love just how he's talking about it. But just to hear the tone of his voice and see the look in his eyes as he's talking about that line is really all you need to know, because I don't know. You've got Tanguy, who can score but loves to pass. You've got Ryan O'Reilly, who's finally looking like he's figuring out what to do without Paul Stastny. And you've got the captain playing like captains should. And hopefully they can keep this going forever. How about that? Can I order that? I'd like that forever. Wouldn't that please be nice? But man, yeah. You've got, you know, Alex Tanguy seems to keep getting better. I mean, as he slows down physically, which is just what's going to happen, he gets better mentally, he gets better with his vision, and watching that guy work is fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
It's
no, absolutely.
They are hockey, and what is what they're doing.
What got into Ryan O'Reilly? I mean, everybody was talking about how he was just basically trade bait. You know, at the beginning of the season, they wanted to see him go. They wanted to see him leave. And he has been a monster lately. He's been skating harder than he ever has. He never quits on any – he doesn't quit on a single skate stride. I mean, I don't want to be hyperbolistic here. But, man, he's absolutely upped his game. Yep. And I don't know why. I don't know what changed.
I like it, though. I think we all like it, obviously, and it's been really awesome to see how well that line has skated. And I think with the injuries, especially with the McKinnon injury, it's been tough to figure out the chemistry. And like I said, I keep going back to it because I don't have any other explanation, but just trying to figure out, you know, Paul Stastny was a pass first guy, but he was a guy you had to respect. He's kind of like a Tanguy, a little bit younger, probably a little more skilled just because of his age. But I think they're finally figuring out what they're doing without him on the power play, five on five, whatever. But man, it's been great to watch, and it's you know, Landeskog. I think they were saying the numbers. He had 6 goals through a crazy amount of games earlier in the year, and now he and Aginla are going for the team leading goals and points and things like that. And man, it's just cool to watch, and it's about time for sure. It's a little too late. Based on the 0.1%, but man, that line has been really fabulous to watch, and hopefully they can keep that going for sure.
Yeah.
In the end though, let's back up just a little bit. The Avalanche are in last place in the Central Division. Now, last place in the Central Division. I like to look at these things a little bit bigger picture. Those of you that know me well know that the Avalanche have 8 games left. They have 80 points. They are currently last in the Central Division. Last in the Pacific Division is Arizona. They are 26 points behind the Avalanche. 26? Yes. Carolina is last in the Metropolitan Division, which is weird to hear me say. They are 16 points behind the Avalanche's 80 points. And the Buffalo Sabres also have 48 points. God, that's not a lot of points at all. But that's 32, that's 32 points behind the Avalanche. So relatively... the Avalanche are doing okay when you think of last place. But man, you look at these stats, the Avalanche are 15-14-9 on the road so far this season. Every single team in their division has a winning record on the road. That's ridiculous. You do not see that happening. Carolina is 11-21-4 on the road. Buffalo is 8-26-3 on the road. Hello for tonight, Avalanche. And the Coyotes are 13-21-3 on the road. I don't know, man. The Avalanche have a huge run. I think they're 8-2-2 at one point in their last 12 games, and they gained no ground in the playoff race. And it's just a tough year to start off slow and pick up late like the Avalanche have.
Yeah, and the drop off between the Avalanche and they're 12th in the conference, and then Edmonton has 57 points. And then Arizona for 54. That's a big drop off.
I don't know, man. That's hard to explain right there. And even their goal differential, the Avalanche's goal differential is -6. Arizona's is -91. Carolina's is -31. And the Buffalo Sabres goal differential is -108 goals. So you want to talk about a last place team? Please don't mention the Colorado Avalanche in that. I think anybody that pays attention, even to just the general things, I mean, the Avalanche there's a pretty good chance, or they're going to finish at or near the bottom of their division. But man, that sure is not saying much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, but you know, that's the structure you have to play in. That's the way it goes. And I kind of, you know, trying to think about how to really think about that in context. It's a disappointing season to not make the playoffs, and yet they still have. If they were in the East, they would be a little higher. They would probably have you know, a few teams that they could pick points from. But still, you know, if they had a stronger start, if at the beginning of the season things had come together better, they probably would have had a better chance.
I think now the way they're talking and the questions that the press can ask, I think they're realizing that. Coach Waz realized they knew this all along, but I think they're able to, I guess, process mm-hmm. it a little bit better. And they're obviously going to approach next season with a different approach. And that obviously needed to happen that they didn't know needed to happen. I think they just thought they could keep on rolling, and it took them a while to figure out that they couldn't. But yeah, these are the dynamics that happens. And I think last year they were the young team that weren't supposed to be there, and they just went out there. They were not supposed to win, so we're going to win anyway. And they kept it loose. This year was obviously not that approach. And I think they tried that approach or as best they could, and that obviously did not work. So yeah. As they talk to the press, you can hear them, and heck, Coach Wah even brought it up. He brought it up in the Terry Fryer article. Is that right? Or am I just making something up here? Yeah, he's talking about coming to camp ready and hungry and making sure their mindset is different. So, we will link that, what I'm talking about, Terry Fry in Denver Post. Terry Fry posted an article today about, Patrick Wah learning a lesson and coming back next year ready and hungry. It's just good to see the team leading up into that, which makes not making the playoffs most likely hurt a little bit less.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, I'm not ready to put the postmortem on. We'll do that, you know, next game or next podcast or whatnot. Sure. But, you know, there's a couple of interesting, you know, interesting players who are hitting the free agent market, you know, who are not going to be back. So I think it's, you know, it's mostly the same team, but there's a little interesting shuffling that.
Yeah, there's going to be enough movement where, you know, heck, Jan Hayda's name came up during the trade line plenty, and he was not moved, and he is an unrestricted free agent after this season. That's going to be a big, I guess, void to fill. He's not your best defenseman, but you don't notice him as much as a Nate Gannon or a Nick Holden or a Brad Stewart. And by notice, I mean like, what was that? That's, you know, you want defensemen that you don't notice most of the time that are just playing solid. And, Jan Hayda's been that for the last 3-4 years for the Avalanche, and it's going to be interesting to see what they decide to do with him and his Hayda bomb. So, what else? Let's talk Rito Barra for a second. He's played the last 5.5 periods for the Avalanche as we record this on what's today, the 29th? Yeah, the morning of the 29th. But Rito Barra has played better. He's finally got it. It was his first start. He played in Vancouver. It was his first start since November. And it's good to see that, you know, with his confidence, I'm sure that has been shaken beyond belief. People talk about, you know, how hard he works and how it's got to be tough mentally to have Pickard come up and get sent down or be in a suit while, you know, Pickard plays. But it's good to see him come back a little more solid and hopefully, you know, hopefully he gets a couple more starts and he keeps playing well. I think if he goes backwards a little bit more, it's going to be tough too. But What are your thoughts on Rito Barra besides him being a goal scorer?
I mean, you dance with the one you bought, and he's signed for the next 2 seasons, and he probably isn't going anywhere. It's not bad money. I know that $1.4 million sounds like a ton, but it's really not that much money for a backup goalie if the backup goalie performs. If he, you know, if he finds his game again, great. I'm not sure that he's really found his game yet, but what I did like was that the shots against were down. And that may be a function of the team playing slightly different in front of him rather than in front of Varley, where they really have confidence that he's always going to stop the puck. But can you imagine if the defense or if the defensive game were a little more like what we saw in front of Barra, that goal differential would be different. The goals against would be different. And there's only, Yeah. I feel like the team did play differently in front of Berra, yeah. But at the same time, you know, the guy's gotta give the guy some time. You gotta give the guy some time on the ice. You gotta put him in game situations. And if now the team is, you know, if they're not going to make the playoffs, fine, put him in and let's see what happens. You know, put him to the test.
Wah said that while the playoff chances were still pretty high. I mean, as much as you'd love to play Varley every game, you can't do it.
No.
So any goalie is going to get worn out, and a worn out goalie is not good.
He's already hurt his groin. What? Twice?
Twice. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
you have to protect that asset, and Bear is supposed to be that asset protection. He's supposed to win you some games when it's time to win a few games. He's supposed to, you know, come in and steal one, or at least not lose one horribly. And, that just hasn't been the case, but great. What's next?
Can you imagine Francois Allaire, the goaltending coach, or Patrick Waugh, or any of the players going up to Bear and being like, hey, tapping him on the butt, being like, hey, don't lose this one horribly, bud. nice vote of confidence for him there. But I mean, I totally agree.
I bet that he probably thinks that himself every so often.
Absolutely.
Boy, I hope I don't live this. I hope I don't lose this horribly tonight.
Absolutely. Please don't lose this horribly. No, I totally agree. And I'm not trying to make fun of that. I mean, that's the thing where mentally it's got to, you have to respect that, because he really doesn't have a whole lot of control over obviously when he plays and when he doesn't. But you know, the chemistry between those guys, Varley has shown me a lot. Varley has been pulled a fair amount this year. I mean, when Varley's on, he's totally on. When he's off, the guys in front of him are a little bit off. And, you know, the beginning of the game before last against the Oilers in Edmonton, that was ugly. But when you see the goaltenders skate past each other after one of them gets pulled, and you can see one of them tap the other on the pads and things like that, those are the things I'm always looking for rather than, and that's just so hockey. And that's one of the reasons why I like the game so much. It's all about class. The guys are rooting for each other. And when you see them skate by each other, and Varley, you can see genuinely tells Berra, hey, pick me up or, you know, do your thing. And you could see Varley after Berra's win in Vancouver, the TV, you know, altitude picked up when they were congratulating each other after the game. And you can see that chemistry is there. And that's the base of what you need to be successful as a team. And it's pretty obvious that the Avalanche have that. There's not a lot of, you know, you can ask the Oilers about this because it's kind of well documented where a Taylor Hall will throw a little fit and throw everything off. I mean, we've seen that, and I'm sure there's a lot of other dynamics that go along with that as well, but it doesn't seem like the Avalanche have that. It seems like the biggest ego in the room is Patrick Waugh, and that's okay when it comes to stuff like this because of his resume. And that's, I don't think the players mind that, and I don't think the organization minds that. And I definitely have a feeling that the fans don't mind that either.
Yeah. And no, it's my big concern with, like, let's say the Avs were going to make the playoffs. What would they do goaltender wise? Would they bring back Pickard, or would they keep, or would they keep Berra in that backup role? And that, if you have to ask that question about your backup, you have an issue. You absolutely have a problem. And if Berra can play his way out, which if you are a regular skater, if you're stuck down on the 5-6-D, if you're on the fourth, you know, been relegated to the fourth line, you have more of an opportunity to play yourself out than a backup goalie who's been benched, because you just aren't going to see the time. You can see everything that you want as far as practice is concerned, but once it gets time where there's 2 points on the line and you have to say who's going to play, that's a little different. And Berra doesn't get that opportunity very often. Hopefully he's going to make the most of it.
Yeah. Well, definitely.
Hopefully it turns around for him, but the Avs need someone to fill that backup space, because, you know, Varley's just not he's not a 75 game guy. He shouldn't have to be.
Oh man. I was just checking. No, I totally agree with what you're saying. And also Retzo Berra signed through the next two seasons. Not only this season. Yeah. He's going to be an unrestricted free agent, 2 years after this one. So, I'm rooting for the guy. I want him to do well. I want the Avs to be solid when it comes to every team. Heck, wants their goaltending situation to be solid. And you don't want to have Varley play, 75 games a year, although he wouldn't mind. It wouldn't be good for his groin. And we want good thoughts for Varley's groin, right? I mean, heck, we want everything to be healthy, but
that you're kind of creeping me out a little bit, but okay. Yeah. I see what I'm you're not saying, trying but to it's, be, a little, would, it's a little weird.
I would never do that as far as trying to be creepy or make anyone feel uncomfortable ever. Really. But
I need an adult.
When you need a safe person to tell.
Exactly.
When it comes to Varley's groin, I think good thoughts about it. I want it to have good karma, and let's get back on
the rest of the goaltending body here for a moment.
I want to talk about a groin.
I want to see Rhett Obera play teams like Buffalo, like Toronto, like Carolina, like Arizona. I want to see him in that role where he plays against the teams where you don't need to steal 2 points where 2 points may be a little more achievable. When you play a team like Buffalo that has 48 points on the season, Rhett Obera should be able to step in there. When you play Arizona, Rhett Obera should be able to step in there no matter what. But obviously, when every game has been must win lately, you have to go with the guy who's always going to give it to you. But that part I think is on Barron. That's really where I want to see him be.
You're taking me back to the pre Duchesne, pre McKinnon, pre Landeskog days, where the Avalanche were the team that would face the backup goaltender way too often, and that used to bug the crap out of me. And I didn't blame teams, but hopefully they can turn this thing around, like they're continuing to do, where other teams can't afford to play their backup goaltender against the Avalanche.
Yeah.
And I
think that there's a part of that there's a certain logic that makes sense from my sofa, where watching the game and thinking about the game, that's how I would play it. That you get the backup plays the lesser team, but it just doesn't seem to work out that way all the time. So
you mean to tell me you have a couch and you have a computer and a Twitter account that doesn't make you a hockey expert?
Oh man. Oh, the things that I just don't know ever about hockey.
Damn it.
Yeah. I don't remember who I was talking to about this, but I've said it a few times. I'll say it again. Never, ever, 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 ever pay 100% attention to anybody who can't tell you that they got something wrong every once in a while. Bob McKenzie is the perfect example of this. TSN's Bob McKenzie.
Yes.
Insider Bob McKenzie.
He has a couple insider followers.
And he will tell you when he gets something wrong, when he said something and it's going to go this way and blah, 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 and it turned out that it didn't, he's like, yeah, well, I got that wrong. Yep. Well, that was a mistake. He makes his best guesses and he says to you, this is a guess or something like that. But when he's absolutely 100% wrong, he'll let you know. And I love that about him. We've seen that so many times with so many writers and so many insiders, quote unquote. And they're just like, they get something wrong and they just, I don't see what you're talking about because, ego or whatever. If you really want to find out who to trust, and this isn't saying that I'm the guy that you trust either, because boy, do I get even more things wrong. but there's nothing wrong with people being able to say, I got that wrong. It's okay.
Great point. That doesn't happen quite often enough. That's for sure. Yeah.
We should wrap this up and let people get back to their lives. Holy cow.
Yeah, that's all right. We're all good. It's good to be back in your ear holes, everyone. We'll have this coming at you. I mean, we got our shout outs. We got the spiel. We got everything else, but man, we appreciate the spiel.
I always forget the spiel.
You got the spiel. I'll give you here. Let me say a few things and we'll be good. But we appreciate your support, everyone. James being on the road, me having a life, him having a life, things get busy and we're trying to figure out what exactly we're going to do with the show moving forward. We're going to keep it coming at you. We're just trying to figure out what's going to work best for us. There's a lot of variables. The James's internet on a road is always a variable, and that is what it is. There's some things that we can't control and things that we can't control, but we still enjoy doing what we're doing, and we very much appreciate your support. We appreciate you downloading the show. If you could please always do your best to try and spread the word, whether that's a retweet or give us some feedback or whatever, that obviously never hurts either. But, you know, this is fun. We enjoy doing what we do, and hopefully that comes through in the show. And, we're going to keep it going, win or lose, playoffs, no playoffs, whatever. Because we have a passion for our team, and we like sharing this passion. And this is one of the ways that we share that passion. And, this is what we do. We've been doing this for a while, and, we appreciate your support. So if you could please do your best to spread the AHP word, we would be very appreciative of that. Thank you very much.
That would absolutely be great. You know, I see a lot. Twitter has this nice little thing on its app where it tells me when somebody retweets or favorites something that we post. I see a lot of favorites of when we put out an episode. You know, hey, new AHP is out, and I see, you know, a lot of favorites. And maybe that's just people saving for later to, you know, remind themselves to come back to it. But if everybody who favorited those tweets could also retweet them, we'd probably gain a few more listeners, which helps. It just does. You know, we're happy to have you here. We want you here, but we also want to bring more people on board too, if we can. So, you know, if you favorite that tweet, go ahead and hit that retweet also. Or if you come on and, you know, Twitter or whatnot and say, hey guys, great episode. Do us a favor, tell other people about it too. Word of mouth is how anything on the internet grows. It's how anything on the internet, gets around. And we need your help to make that happen. So if you could do that, we'd greatly appreciate it.
Definitely. James and I are very, very, I guess through the years, we've had to be thoughtful of how we put things together and how we organize things. And one of the things that, you know, people have brought up through the years is why don't you get a sponsor, or why don't you, have people do things for you or whatever. We like podcasting because it's ours and we can keep it ours. We have that choice. So we don't have to say, hey, go to our sponsor and, you know, they support us this way and this way and this way. We do this all ourselves. And we have done that very purposefully throughout the years. We've had our chances to be able to monetize what we do either through like advertising on our site or, you know, through Twitter, things like that. But we do this all on our own. And so it's definitely an organic and it's something that he and I have made the choice to make that way so we can keep it our own. And we take a lot of pride in that. So we'll talk a little bit more about that as things move forward. We'll talk a little bit more on the off season about besides listens, how you might be able to support us. And it's not going to be anything, a big time commitment or anything like that, but we've definitely gotten to the point as a show where it's a little more work to put this together. It's a little more work on James's end, obviously, because he doesn't know what he's going to deal with the internet on the road. It continues to be complicated on my end because my kids are getting older and we're busy and things like that. But overall, we don't want to make you feel any certain way about it. We want you to feel good that we're all connected and we're all in this avalanche thing together. And I think that shines through with what we do and how we tweet and all those things too. So overall,
yeah, we want to
thank you.
I really want to make sure that when we do these, you know, that when we put out a show, we want it to have the least amount of friction possible between you and your enjoyment of it, you know, and things like advertising and all of that gets in the way of that. Doing something like this, you know, where we have to talk directly about, you know, hey, here's what's going on. That gets in the way of it. And, you know, what we really want to do is just have a better, more enhanced, fan experience, not just for us, but for you. You know, we could be fans in a little cave and not ever talk to any other fans or whatnot, but we have a good time. This enhances my experience as a fan.
Absolutely.
And we hope it enhances your experience as a fan also. So, this, you know, we'll, this goes, as Jay said, we'll talk a little more about it another time. But
this goes both ways. James through the years has made me, with his perspectives and how we're able to connect on the show, he's made me a more knowledgeable fan. He's given me more passion for the game. And I hope with what James and I create, we're able to give you more passion about the game and Avalanche hockey. And that is why we do what we do. And that's why we've done what we've done for so long. So we appreciate you, and we definitely don't want to make you feel, like I said, any certain way besides let's go Avs. That's pretty much it. That's what we need. So,
and Jay is a very tall and terrifying man, so do what he says.
Yeah, so I mean, if I could bully you personally, I definitely would. I'm not boardy sized, but I'm a little bit smaller than that.
Slightly. But, you're a good shade. You
have a lot of shade. Oh, here we go. It's getting spooky you're again. Tall. See? You're getting spooky again. You tell me I'm spooky. No, I'm just
you're
kidding.
Tall.
I'm just
you
kidding.
Black out
tall.
The sun.
I'm tall. I'm hashtag team 58 plus. What's up, my man Hirsch? Mm-hmm. All right. How you doing spiel wise? Are we good?
Let's do this thing.
James is spieling it. Here we go.
You can always find the Avs Hockey Podcast at www.avshockeypodcast.com. Over there, there's so much stuff. There's videos. There's links. There's like links to t-shirts. There's links to Avs chat and Avs Twitter psychic. And you can comment on this episode and tell us, man, that was way too long. you can also find a link there to subscribe in iTunes, which is just the easiest way. And, you know, we talk about trying to find better ways of getting this to you. There's also a link to subscribe via RSS. You can put that in any podcatcher that you want, whether it's on Android or in your computer, and that'll work universally. You can email us at avshockeypodcast@gmail.com. You can find the Avs Hockey Podcast Facebook fan page, which is at facebook.com/avshockeypodcast. Jay is on Twitter at Avs Podcast. You can also call us at 845-704-7465. We've had a few people lately say, hey, I'd love to be on your show, or I'd love to, you know what, call, leave a message. Let's bring this on so we have some talking points. If you have a talking point that you want us to talk about, we haven't done an Ask AHP lately. We'll probably do that for the next one because, you know, there's going to be a lot of questions as to what the heck happened with this season. We're happy to have those. So hashtag Ask AHP when you feel like you have something that you want us to talk about. And I'm on Twitter at TapeLeg and my blog where I've been posting some pictures from places that I've been to see some hockey is at jerseysandhockeylove.com. I've got pictures from the Ottawa 67s. I've got one coming up from the Gatineau Olympiques of the QMJHL, which is where Patrick Waugh's team that he is a part owner of.
That sounds very hockey
in that league. It is so hockey. It is one of the most hockey places I've ever been.
Yes.
And it's pretty awesome. Yeah. And you can also see places like San Antonio, which is probably one of the less hockey places that I've been, but you still get to see it.
Nice. And
I believe that does it for the spiel.
Hey, all that stuff that James just mentioned is why the Avs Hockey Podcast is your home for almost everything Avalanche. That's what it's there for. So that is episode number 94 of the Avs Hockey Podcast. You're home for almost everything Avalanche. Another great Ryan Smith memory. He and Milan Hayduk scoring their 300th career goals in the same game on, that was Sunday, January 18th, 2009. I was there. That was cool. So shout out to Rafe Bass, who owns both of the jerseys the guys were wearing for those 300th game goals game. That's nice. Pretty awesome. That's good stuff. So. James, any shout outs real quick? Good with those?
My shout out is, I have only one shout out this week. I mean, I would have a few more, but I think it's fitting to only have one, this week. Jay and I, when we've done this podcast, we have had a great source that we've relied on over and over, called capgeek.com, where, all the salary numbers were broken down and the like. And I believe it was right after our last episode that CapGeek shut down.
Yep.
The founder had health issues that he did not talk about. And just recently, the founder of CapGeek passed away. He had colon cancer, and nobody really knew about it. And he was kind of, even though his name was out there and people knew who he was kind of one of those unsung heroes of hockey information. There's a lot of, there's obviously the whole fancy stats movement right now. There's a lot of people who are big on that. But CapGeek was such a resource that even that mainstream media and even teams relied on it for information about player salaries. And in this cap era, even though people like Gary Bettman say, oh, the fans don't really want to know about that, it was pretty obvious that the fans needed to know about stuff like that. And Cap Geek was that wonderful resource. So shout out Postmortem to the founder of Cap Geek. That was a great site. And taking up the slack right now is NHLnumbers.com. Hopefully, I've used it some in the past, but I don't think it's as comprehensive, but hopefully it'll get there. Obviously, a great gap was lost, so that's my shout out.
Absolutely. Well said. Cap Geek has it changed the fan game, and when Gary Bettman figures that out, maybe it'll be too late. I don't know, but a great resource, like you said, for teams as well. I saw the Toronto Maple Leafs send some flowers to the family, and I'm sure there were other teams that did the same thing. So definitely shout out NHL Numbers. Thank you for the research and everything that you do. Shout out to Avalanche DB, which is where I was reading the Ryan Smith stats from. Appreciate them. Shout out to the Avalanche organization. Their Twitter account continues to do a fabulous job, especially to Rob Davenbauer and Ryan Boulding. You guys do a fabulous job on the Twitter feed. Thank you very much for that and for your support for Avs Twitter Psychic. When you send out those Avs Twitter Psychic tweets just often enough, it makes an Avs fan feel really good. So thank you for that. Shout out to all the Avs Twitter Psychic players out there. Past 6,500 tweets used during this season, during last game. We should finish right around, I bet you around 7,500 tweets for the year, and that's fabulous. I appreciate everybody making that a part of their game day experience. So if you'd like to play, check out my Twitter feed. It's got all the information you need. And we'll do an Avs chat, and we will definitely do Ask AHP here coming up here pretty soon. So anything else, James? Are we good?
I guess I should put out shout out number two real fast, just to the, since you mentioned the Avs Twitter, the Avs PR Twitter handle.
Yes.
I don't often get it these days. I don't often go over it because there's just so much, but they've been putting out the game notes. And right now I'm looking at the Vancouver game notes from before. You know, this is the packet basically that the media would get. And this was something that several years ago you would not see out there in the wild. Huge pack of stats, lots of information, gets anybody who is with the media or whatnot ready for the game with just about every piece of information you could possibly want, other than salary, obviously. But this is 51 pages of information. It's stuff like this. It's information like this that allows Jay and I just to go do a show and not have a whole lot of, you know, not have a ton of friction. We can look at this and go, oh, the man game numbers that I pulled off were off of this today. And there's this so much information that that people put out, and this is just part of that. Excuse me. So shout out to Avs PR for putting that out. That's really, it's really helpful. It's a nice thing. So follow them, Avs PR on Twitter if you want to see the game notes before a game. 51 pages of information.
There you go. Good stuff.
I think that at the top of the season we were going to do something. We were going to try and go a little shorter. I don't think we accomplished that this season.
Nah, I think we're going to do a few more shows, but life and things and stuff. I hope nobody minds too much. Hey, you can listen to work and on your way home from work instead of just to work. So now we're trying to figure out exactly what we're going to do moving forward. We're always trying to think of what would be best for us and what would be best for you guys. So we went a little long on this one, but that's okay. We're just doing what we do. Hopefully you appreciate it. We appreciate your support. So thank you. James, right on, my man. And let's talk soon, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Jay.
All right, right on. Everybody else, we'll be back in your ear hole soon. Probably after the season, we'll bring everything back together. We'll talk about next season. And, you know, it's the worst part of the year. It's spring and it's getting warmer, at least in Denver, not in Cincinnati, right? Is that, yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah, hockey season's almost over, and I don't like it when hockey season's over. So we'll start looking towards next year, and we'd love for you guys to be a part of it. So until we're in your ear holes next time, very soon, take care. Let's go, Avs. And James and I will see you next time on the Avs Hockey Podcast. See ya.
Do you have songs that get like, do you have like a few songs that like whenever they come on, they get stuck in your head and you hate it?
No,
do you have any of those?
No, but I have random songs for no, absolutely no. Like I can't even remember what the song was, but it was in my head most of the night as I was, you know, trying to sleep or whatever. I honestly can't remember which song it was now, but and there's nothing specific, but I do get songs really easily caught in my head.
There was a specific song that would get stuck in my head, and I don't know who it is. It was on, it would come on the radio, and I'd be sitting at home, and I'd be sitting on my sofa, and it would start to play, and I would literally start going, la, 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 I can't hear this because I don't want it stuck in my head. La, 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 all the way while walking over to the radio to turn it off.
That's great.